Coming up in this weekend, computer hardware, GeForce GTX 1080, almost here. New AMD A10 and A8 APUs. The God of RE refresh has been benchmarked. My Digital SSD has a deal for you. AMD adds more FreeSync and more. It's all coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 362, recorded May 5th, 2016. The world's fastest GPU? We'll find out tomorrow. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost, automated investment service and the most sophisticated way to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit Wealthfront.com/Twitch and sign up to get your free, personalized investment portfolio. That's Wealthfront.com/Twitch. Welcome to Twitch This Week in Computer Hardware, Twitch's weekly show that aims to bring you the most useful, most informative, most delightful, and this week, most hard drive and SSD, well, informed commentary ever. Alan Malventano joining us from PCPer.com. Mr. Ryan Shrout is last been heard of in Florida, surrounded by Harley Davidson enthusiasts.
He has. Is he alive? He's still alive. He is on some much-needed family vacation.
Nothing says family vacation like babies and Harleys.
Yeah, pretty much.
Ryan, I should point out, is not on a Harley Davidson, nor is his child.
No,
as far as
we know. Harleys is not his thing.
Electric cars he's good with.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. So we've been following the NVIDIA, the GeForce GTX saga, the series of smaller and smaller leaks, or bigger and bigger leaks. Scott's got a write-up on PCPer.com. You know, that came out earlier today. NVIDIA's got a teaser website called Order of 10 that is counting down to 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And then in theory at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight, they will have a live stream on their Twitch channel. And it sounds like it might be the GeForce GTX 1080 ? Because a benchmark has been leased. A video card's got a hold of 3D Mark Firestrike Extreme benchmarks that registered an 8 gigabyte card with a GPU clock of 1860 megahertz is what Scott was writing up there. It's synthetic. It's not games. It's a single benchmark. But it does score, quote, slightly higher than a reasonably overclocked GTX 980 Ti and way above a stock one. Yields a graphic score of 10,102 on Firestrike Extreme 1.1. And the 980 Ti hits 7,781 without an overclock.
Yep. So that's like, what is that, like a 20% gain or so?
I could do the math, but let's call it 20%. Yeah, 25%.
Somewhere around there. Yeah, so that's not a bad jump for, you know, generation to generation, right?
Mm-mm. No. Yeah. What I think will really be curious is what the pricing is going to be like.
Yes, very true.
Because we've been seeing a lot of expensive GPUs lately. But that's pretty much all we have until tomorrow. Like, could break 2 gigahertz, but we doubt it. Well, could break 2 gigahertz overclock. That'd be interesting to see how well the performance scaled with that.
Yeah.
But if you have time, 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight, orderof10.com, humanity shall be lightened. I can't decide if it's an awesome or a creepy website.
Sound like a movie trailer guy.
Yeah. In a world gone mad, in a search for greater VR performance, an order of 10 will arrive to make things more awesome. I mean, like, well, it's funny, right? There's these landscape shots from airplanes and from boats. There's like New York City, what could be part of London or Mississippi. You know, there's the Prelude, which is, you know, which looks like you've just stumbled into some sort of a myth game. I don't know how else to describe it. If you click up on the corner up there in the bar and go to the Prelude, you know, there's like, oh, there's a constellation. I can't click on any of this, but there's Johannes Kepler's discovery of elliptical orbits was a crucial breakthrough in understanding the universe and our place within it. He also gave great consideration to constellations as he lived in an age where astronomy and astrology were one. Like, that's random. I mean, I'm a non sequitur with feet, but that's random. Gravitational optical tessellation findings reports. All right. The existence of gravitational waves. You know, I'm sure there's, you know, the kind of writing that's on this indicates that there must be some kind of, you know, code buried in here. So people with fewer children, more time, and a propensity for cracking codes are probably going nuts on this.
We'll check in with the Illuminati. I'm sure there'll be more updates.
More updates from the Illuminati. But the countdown, as we recorded, this was at 21 hours, 12 minutes, and 50 seconds now. There's the bridge, the Golden Gate Bridge, the Opera House, the antenna in Germany, San Francisco skyline, Great Wall of China, Taj Mahal. I'm kind of tripping on this, but it sounds like a great big thing to promote the newest and greatest NVIDIA board. So tomorrow, people, we'll have all the information.
Tomorrow
creeps in its petty pace from day to day. That's Shakespeare, folks. AMD A10 7860K and A8 7670K review, the Godavari refresh. I think Josh pretty much wraps it up in four words.
Yep.
Taciturn man from Wyoming, he can be. Lower power, same performance.
Tied
people over till the Zen architecture shows.
Yep, but a lot of his review was also just comparing, like, okay, how do these parts compare with Intel CPUs that are in roughly the same price range? So he threw in an i3 4330 and an i3 6100. And nice. Basically what it boiled down to was when it came to CPU intensive stuff, Intel just cleaned house, right? When it came to power consumption, Intel still kind of cleaned house, especially with the 6100, right?
But not as bad as they would have a year ago.
true. But if it came to you need a CPU and you don't want to use discrete graphics,
right,
then AMD cleaned house, right? Because it was basically twice the graphics performance compared to even the i3 6100.
We spec'd out a $500 PC build on Tech Thing. And one of the interesting things about looking at that was we actually included the cost of a copy of Windows 10, inside of that $500 build, and even the 6100, which is which is like the latest generation part, and DDR4 memory, was still like, $500, $509 right around there. That was with a 950. I mean, how does a build with, with the new Godavari parts compare to like a 750 Ti? I mean, does a 750 Ti spank them, or is it still in the neighborhood?
Actually, I'm not sure. I think a 750 Ti would beat them, though.
Okay. Sorry, I thought those numbers were in there.
No, he didn't include 750 Ti in there. He was just going for, like, onboard graphics performance. Just on chip, basically.
More than double. I mean, you're looking at more than double the
power consumption. In this case, the games he was playing, it went from basically unplayable to playable, right? Because it went from like 15 frames per second to 30. And if you get to 30, 30 is on the low end, but at least it's playable. 15 is like, is like a picture slideshow more than it is video, almost. So it just, too hard to play on at least the Intel solutions with the graphics settings he was trying to use.
And when you get to 3D Mark Fire Strike, even with ATI's graphic, you're still looking at like 7 frames per second, if I'm reading that correctly, versus 4 frames per second on an i3 6100. So it's obviously considerably better than what's going on inside of the Intel chips, but I still think if you're going to game, you want to budget at some point and upgrade to a 750 Ti. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you still really can't beat, even a low-end discrete GPU still, right? Or just, you just can't cram that much stuff on right next to where the CPU's at. you know, there's only so much performance you can squeeze out of that small of a space, at least at present.
Right. I'm just not, I guess I'm just frustrated. I don't like the upgrade path for the AMD processors right now. So I'd rather spend, you know, I'd rather go Intel. I'm not feeling the love for AMD processors right now.
Yeah. I mean, we hope they'll catch up, because if anything, you know, it would make Intel CPUs get even a little bit cheaper. Right.
But I would like that. And it's good that the power requirements are more in line with what we've been expecting from other places. Whether or not you care about that on a desktop's different conversation, but I don't know. Yay, AMD, keep going after Intel's heels. We like that.
Yeah.
Who is my digital SSD?
It is basically just an SSD, like rebrand, kind of repackager kind of company. Just. You know, kind of like ADATA. You know, like, they don't have their own controller. They just package other people's parts and just try to make an SSD out of them. In this case, they are making a 480 gig. It's basically just a silicon, or not Silicon Motion. It's a Phison S10 controller.
Right.
And I'm trying to tell, it's just this, is this M.2 SATA? I believe. It's either M.2 SATA, or if it is M.2 PCIe, it just has a bridge chip to bridge it to SATA. So basically the performance is... Performance is just SATA 3, right? So you're only going to get like 500 or 550 meg per second throughput on this.
But $130 for 480 gigabyte SSD, that seems like a pretty solid deal.
Yeah, that's definitely a pretty solid deal, actually. But you have to remember, you're using TLC flash. If you're going to really beat on this a lot, it might not perform the best, or it might not last the longest, I should say. But also, since it is TLC, there is an SLC cache on it. But if you're going to be really, you know, super, super power usery, then you might actually see yourself run out of the write cache and get into the TLC region where you're just writing straight to TLC. But with 8 gig of it, you really have to write 8 gig like in a row in order to fill that thing up. Because as soon as it goes idle for even a second or two, it's immediately trying to empty that cache into the TLC area. So chances are 99% of the time, anytime you go to write to this, you're writing straight to SLC. Right. Yeah, basically it's the same. Basically, this is the other companies like Phison, Silicon Motion, whatnot, using either Toshiba or Hynix also makes it now. It's like their answer to the equivalent of what Samsung's flash does, where they have a little bit of SLC on each die and then the rest is TLC, just like what you see in the Samsung Evo drives. This is the other manufacturers catching up with them on that kind of a design.
It's a nice price. You're looking at about a third less than a 500 gigabyte M.2 drive. A Samsung 850 is going to cost you $192.
Yep.
Possibly $160, although in those cases you're not getting free Amazon shipping and you're paying. Oh no, those are pre-ordered. Yeah, $15 to $25 for shipping.
Yep, you're definitely getting a lower cost device. Performance is probably not going to be equivalent to an 850 Evo.
In a way that you're going to notice, or primarily in terms of benchmarks.
The thing that you run into on 850 Evos, or just Samsung in general, compared to other manufacturers, other types of flash, is their QDepth 1 latency is extremely low on Samsung. That's the thing that helps the system seem snappier, even when it's not bogged down. And they just continue to dominate there. But this SSD is like $50 cheaper. So not only $50 cheaper, but it's like 50% cheaper. Yeah. So that's the point where it's kind of like, well, who cares if it's just a little bit less responsive? Like, it's just way cheaper.
It's also going to still destroy a hard drive if you've been like, I'm going to keep using this rotating hard drive for a while longer. It's really time to start looking at the prices of you know, either discrete SATA SSDs, the 2.5 millimeter packaging, or if you got an M.2 slot on your motherboard, because they're getting cheap. And you know, having built some, like, the $500 PC and a couple of you know, sort of like what's in the parts bin and slapping things together, boy, I say it a lot and I'll say it again, SSDs are a lot faster.
Yeah. So, They are. There's really no way around that. There's a lot of people still holding on to their velociraptors for dear life.
I understand. But I'm not going to do it. I also bought a 1 terabyte SSD for my primary work system, and that was awesome. Because I don't really worry about storage, and it's as fast as an SSD. So the IcDoc Tough Armor, we're looking at 8 2.5-inch drives. No, 12 2.5-inch drives?
No, it's 8. So
it's 8. Okay.
There's 2 devices. I reviewed 2 of the IcDoc Tough Armor series products.
Got it.
So there is an 8-bay hot swappable model that's called a MB998SP, and then you can get it in black, or I think you can only get it in black, so it's dash B. So that is a 5.25-inch, basically just a CD-ROM sized device, right? Goes into your tower, desktop, server, whatever, anything that has a bay that size. And it gives you the ability to have hot swappable 8 2.5-inch SSDs mounted in a very small package. It's about the size of if you just stacked up 8 2.5-inch SSDs on your desk. Like there's literally like a couple of millimeters space between each SSD in this housing. There have been other ones like this in the past, but this is the first one I've seen that can hold 8 drives. Usually like 6 is the max. And they also have more recently introduced a 993 SK model, and that is a 3.5-inch form factor that can hold 3 SSDs, which is just about as many as you can squeeze into a 3.5-inch form factor. Any previous ones I've seen that do this kind of a thing would only hold 2, right?
Right.
So the way that they did this is they just did a bunch of like reworking of how their SSD mounts, like with the tray. In other words, the tray is very, very low profile. In the case of the 8-bay model, it's just a very thin, thin piece of metal underneath the SSD, and the screws just screwing from below. But for that 3-bay model, they didn't even have that much space. So those trays just have like a pair of arms that just hold on to the right and left side of the SSD. And then the screws go into the side mounting screw holes for the SSDs in that case. But for either one of them, what you end up with is that number of SSDs translates into that number of SATA ports just available at the rear of the unit. Right. The 8-bay unit has a couple of 40 millimeter fans that do not sound like rack mount server fans. They're actually like low speed fans that don't really have a high pitch whine to them or anything. They are plugged into the rear of the unit, like with actual just right standard fan connectors. So if you didn't need the extra cooling, you could just unplug those plugs and then the unit's just dead silent. The power for the 8-bay unit is a pair of SATA power connectors. So if you were going to try to put 8 SSDs into a system, at a minimum, you don't have to worry about coming up with 8 SATA power connectors to wire them all, right? In this case, you only need 2. And then you just need the 8 SATA cables all, you know, straight to your motherboard, assuming your motherboard has 8 SATA ports on it, right? My only quibble with both of these devices was on the 3.5-inch model. They decided to go with a 4-pin floppy-style power connector for power instead of SATA, even though if you look at the rear, there's one of the pictures in the article is the rear of both units, and there was plenty of room back there for them to just put a SATA power connector, just like what's on the 8-bay model. I don't know why they chose not to do it. Maybe they thought rack mount servers with 3.5-inch bay were more likely to just have a 4-pin power available. That's probably why they chose to go that way, but it does kind of make it something to consider if you're going to try to put it into your desktop system and you have a newer power supply that maybe didn't even come with that cable, because it's getting to that point, right? My storage testbed system has a fairly recent power supply connected to it. A modular one with a bunch of different cables available in the box, and I had to go digging back through the box looking for 4-pin power, and it wasn't even one of the included cables. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, even a modular power supply, in my case, one of them didn't even come with that. So bear that in mind. You might have to get one of those adapters if you want to use that unit. 3.5-inch model is also lockable. Comes with a little cipher lock, or what's the name of that? Or Chapman lock style key.
Right.
So you can lock that if you're worried your kids are going to like get into it or something like that if it's for your house. because you don't want your kid like hitting the button and pulling out like your primary OS drive that's sitting in there.
Always
and
awkward.
Like, you know, look, daddy, look at this. And like you're on your computer that's about the blue screen while he's holding your SSD. They couldn't make the 5 1/4 inch model lockable because if you look at the front of that thing, there's just no room.
Right.
Like there's just no place to put like a locking mechanism on it. There's just the front of it is just a wall of SSDs, basically. So pretty cool devices. The line is called Tough Armor. They're basically all steel construction. There's a picture on their site that shows like running over with a truck. And other reviewers have done that with these in the past and not bent them. So
that's good.
It's reasonably durable. Like it's just steel construction. It's not aluminum. It's not like thin aluminum or anything silly like that's going to bend. So definitely durable. And it's like a powder coated black finish on it as well. So yeah, like you could pretty much bang these things up and they'll still, you know, continue to look good. I don't know why you'd need to bang up a computer, you know, computer stuff that badly, but,
strange and terrible things happen for
that's true.
Unknown
that's true.
And weird reasons.
you're looking at $65 for that 3-bay model and $120 for the 8-bay model, which is significantly cheaper than I've seen other similar hot swap type things like this in the past. Like especially one, the 8-bay with the 40mm fans at the rear, because usually that's more of a server-ish kind of piece of equipment. And usually carries with it like server pricing. Like I bought one of a similar one of these that only had 4 bays in it a couple of years back. And I think it was like closer to $200 just for it. So prices have come down. They look better. They're made more durable. And if you look at ICDoc's site, they're like a Swiss Army knife people for like trying to convert from one form factor to another. They have all sorts of different ways to you know, mix and match physical device connectivity, if you will. So pretty cool, worth looking into.
Nice.
If you have such a need.
Should you need the fast mobile storage or the fast local storage?
Yes.
Oh my goodness. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Wealthfront. You invest for the long term for you or your family's financial health, but trying to do it yourself, especially the right way, it's never as easy as you think it should be. It's complex. It's time-consuming. Luckily, there's Wealthfront. Traditional advisors charge huge fees, between 1% and 3% of what they manage. With Wealthfront, you pay 0.25% a year. That's 25 basis points. Zero commissions, no hidden fees. That's less than $5 a month to invest a $30,000 account. That is cheap, people. No additional charges for Wealthfront services. You can get started investing today with as little as $500. If you are young, you in your 20s, if you're not saving money, you should be. Because, man, compound interest over time, it is a big deal. People, start investing while you're young before you think you need to. Unlike other financial advisors, Wealthfront's not going to bog you down with dozens of questions. They've simplified their risk identification process that allows you to begin investing sooner. It takes a few minutes to sign up at Wealthfront.com, and it goes right to work, monitoring your portfolios around the clock, taking advantage as soon as an opportunity arises. Wealthfront portfolios are based on modern portfolio theory, people. And if you're wondering what that is, it's really, really simple. Right? If the idea is that they are designed to adjust according to your personal risk tolerance while staying diversified, it basically means they work really hard to keep you out of trouble, to make you a lot of money, and to make sure you don't lose all the money you make on taxes. That's awesome. Wealthfront is transparent and accessible. You can view and track all your accounts in one place. And now Wealthfront can track both your Wealthfront and non-Wealthfront bank and brokerage accounts. And they actually provide a summary of all your assets. You can see every trade that Wealthfront makes on your behalf on your dashboard, on your desktop, or with their mobile app. They're managing almost $3 billion in client assets now, and it is growing rapidly every day. What are you waiting for, people? Invest in your future today with Wealthfront. Visit Wealthfront.com/Twitch. That's Wealthfront.com/TWICH to sign up and get your free personalized investment portfolio. You'll see the customized allocation they recommend for your profile. And just for Twit listeners, if you sign up to invest, Wealthfront will manage your first $15,000 entirely free of charge for life. Do yourself a favor. Join the many Twit fans who have seen huge success with Wealthfront and claim your offer today at Wealthfront.com/Twitch. We want to thank them for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware. Oh, my goodness. The LGs LG is, speaking of investing, LG is investing in a huge way in OLED, which makes sense, right? It is the thing in terms of LG's battle with Samsung for HD TVs. Robert Herron just got to look at the new G5s, which is the less expensive version of the glass used in the G6, essentially. I should say that the less expensive TV, basically the same glass. LG Display told Reuters, Scott writes, that the display panel company will increase their investment in OLED production by $395.99 million USD. They're working on an $8.7 billion facility that's going to manufacture everything from smartwatch OLEDs to big old TV OLEDs. It would be nice if this would scale faster. We're not really seeing this in any meaningful way on desktops. It is, however, a big deal at the high end of LG's offerings. Quote, Scott says, this is before LG's display production facility wakes up in 2018, and LG is known to push lower prices into markets just a couple of years. And I got to say, I would love to see OLED desktop monitors, incredible blacks, beautiful colors. And it would be nice, you know, in terms of refresh rates being high, persistence being low. But it is going to be probably a couple more CESs before we see that stuff showing up in a really meaningful way, or at least in a meaningful way that is affordable. Just a thin line, line. What'd you think of the new frequencies and panel types, the frequency ranges and panel type that AMD was adding to the FreeSync page?
Yeah, they just basically dumped the whole list there.
Oh, really?
There's a whole bunch of panels there. So there is a ability of FreeSync panels to try to do what G-Sync panels were able to do, where basically G-Sync panels were able to expand the low end of their refresh rate range by just dynamically or just automatically redrawing when they needed to. LCDs have a minimum refresh rate that you have to stick to. Otherwise, bad things start happening, like the pixels actually start to get messed up, like physically. You can't just like leave them at one potential continuously. You have to change them every so often. So that's where a minimum refresh rate, like a physical minimum refresh rate, comes in for a given LCD panel. Well, in G-Sync's case, the module just takes care of it. In FreeSync's case, there is no module. It's just whatever comes from the GPU. So not too long ago, AMD made a different version of their driver and introduced a low frame rate compensation, right? So it's basically the driver sees that the frame is taking too long to come to render from the game or whatnot, and then it can just resend the existing frame if it needs to, in effect doing the similar kind of thing that G-Sync panels did. But there's a catch, and that's if the panel itself had a range that wasn't at least like double, in other words, from the low end to the high end, if you had a panel that was like 48 hertz to 75 hertz, you can't do that extra frame doubling, because to double 48, you're going to exceed 75, and the panel can't exceed 75. So you're kind of stuck there, right? That's why AMD came up with this chart, and they even have a checkbox. If you'll notice on the right side of that chart, there's a LFR column, and it just simple, plain as day, there's a check there or not if it can do that compensation, saving you from having to do the math with the refresh rate range that's displayed. So there's the low frame rate compensation slide, and something that surprised me just actually last night on the podcast is I thought that when AMD came out with this, I was like, oh, thank God, like the majority of FreeSync displays should now do what G-Sync displays do, because the just off the top of my head, the only ones I thought that had such a limited range were like the ultra wide panels that were like, there was an LG ultra wide FreeSync one, that like one of the first ones that came out, and it was kind of a bummer because it was like its range was something like 48 to 75, and I was like, well, you can't do doubling on that, it's just not going to work. And in my mind, it was just a few panels, like with most of the other ones being able to do it or capable of doing it. And if you scroll through that list, it looks like there's actually a lot more FreeSync panels that can't do that than I originally thought. Like there's pretty, you can scroll for a bit in a couple of places on that list and see that there's no checkbox in the LFC column. So, and there's nothing really they can do about that either. Because just the panel range is the panel range. It's what it was manufactured to be able to handle. And the only real way to fix it is to either try to overclock the panel and hope that you can get to a higher maximum. That's at least two times like the minimum. But if you can't, then, you know, you just can't use that feature, I guess. But definitely good on them for, you know, having an advertised feature like LFC, for example, and making it easier for people to see, oh, hey, I'm about to buy this FreeSync panel, or I want LFC on my panel that I purchase. Which one should I get? And you can just, you know, look at this list. Makes it easier for you, right?
Right.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
The it's funny. One of the other things that went down this week, moving in a completely different direction, is OpenWRT has forked, which is something that happened. So if you're not particularly familiar with open source is volunteers, right? And open source, you know, is something where if someone disagrees with what's going on in a project, they often, because it's open source, take the code from the project and start their own project that's based off of a split. So many different areas. I mean, obviously Linux itself, you know, there's dozens, if not hundreds of different distributions. OpenWRT, I think it's very interesting that there's been a split with a bunch of major developers because, you know, it's considered a firmware program for embedded devices such as residential gateways and routers. And it is important, I think, for a lot of older routers that if you want to keep them running, if you want security updates, you need OpenWRT. And now the LEED project, nice write-up from the Register, has started. The Linux Embedded Development Environment describes itself, writes the Register, as a breakaway project that wants to overcome what it sees as faults in OpenWRT. You know, they're concerned that the core developers, number of core developers are going down on OpenWRT, which is something that usually happens the longer a project exists. You know, they're concerned about the transparency in OpenWRT, and they're claiming that they have a whole bunch of the active or most active OpenWRT developers. They name six or seven of them. You know, some people feel it's a ridiculous rebranding. Some people feel they're not as transparent as they could be, given they have complaints about OpenWRT's transparency. You know, OpenWRT says more in sorrow than anger. You know, they're saying, hey, some of these issues are legit. They'd hope to discuss and fix the issues rather than have, you know, a big old breakaway like this. You know, if you're curious, LEDE-project.org, they're calling it a reboot of the OpenWRT community. You know, regular predictable release cycles coupled with community provided device testing feedback, establishing transparent decision processes with broad community participation in public meetings. You know, they want, you know, more reliable infrastructure, fixes that don't get bogged down in internal disagreements. And they're frustrated. So hopefully the LEED project will turn out well. You know, if it takes all of the goodness of OpenWRT, and there's a lot of good to be had there, and makes it more awesome, I am down with that. On the flip side, I'm always concerned when important open source projects fork in a major way, because, you know, either means something better happens or maybe both projects start to fizzle out in time. So
yeah,
I have my concerns. If you've been thinking about a new liquid cooler, Corsair just updated their H80i. HardOCP has a nice roundup of it. You know, if you haven't seen it, it's basically one of the smaller. It's the Twee Corsair liquid cooler. And it's been
a long time. Looks like a push pull setup on the fans, though.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, they basically the thing that HardOCP notes is like, this is it's a cooler that's been around for a while. A lot of changes have happened to liquid cooling, a lot of competition, with 120 millimeter fans and that very dense packaging and radiator, it's going to fit in systems that a lot of the bigger, because, you know, we've seen these 240 millimeter, 480 millimeter radiators, these crazy radiators. If you want the software control that the HADI V2 has, that's great. If you don't, you can spend less money and get something like a liquid freezer 120 from Arctic Cooling for just $65. They have a really interesting price performance chart on the last page of the roundup. I highly suggest you head over to Hardware CP and see the work that Kyle was doing there. But whether the dollar performance radio, which is the cost or how much you pay for each degree in temperature reduction the heatsink gives you over the stock cooler, right? So in this case, it's about $2.93 per degree. $3.35 per degree on low and $2.93 per degree on high. The Scythe Mugen 4, which is an air cooler that I use on one of my systems, that costs you $1.95 per degree cooling. But it's also interesting to look because you look at some of these coolers and you're paying like $9 per degree, which is a way of saying, boy, this is an expensive cooler that doesn't work very well. Good write-up. Silver Award, Editors and Choice, Hardware CP Silver Award, $86, not a bad price. There are less expensive options out there, but they don't have some of the nicer, like the software control features that are available for Corsair's HADI V2. Do you use Netflix on your cell phone?
Not on my cell phone, usually.
Okay.
Why?
A lot of people do. Oh, I brought it up because I saw it was interesting. I've been thinking a lot about data caps, with Comcast and their sort of, 1 terabyte options, which is massive, right? But it's going to cost you a bunch of money. And Netflix just dropped new data controls that run on your cell phone. So if you find yourself chewing through your bandwidth on your cell phone because you're watching a lot of movies, which I think is more common than I thought, and may not be, but gives you a head up. They'll basically allow you to control the amount of data you use when you're on cellular networks, and you'll get about 3 hours of TV shows or movies per gigabyte of data. That's about 600 kilobits per second, which is pretty reasonable in terms of data consumption, especially compared to the standard sort of optimized for cable modem bandwidth that happens in terms of traditional Netflix setting. It's interesting in part because what we're seeing, and especially in places like YouTube, is a huge amount of video consumption is actually being done on mobile devices, whether it's kids in their bedroom or people commuting on the train. You don't have to be at a desktop or a laptop to watch video, or increasingly people aren't. You also don't have to blow through your data cap in 4 or 5 days of excessive binging, which has been known to happen for some people. So, man,
all right.
Anything going on at PC Per you can tease for us?
Let's see. Tease at PC Per. Well, there's probably going to be some 1080 stuff coming.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying. And actually, I don't think there's anything else that I can tease yet.
I should point out that Alan, if you want to get into an extended conversation about his latest benchmarking efforts and what's going on with
latency percentile stuff.
Latency percentile stuff. We had him on Tech Thing this week. Getting his geek on and talking about the best SSD option out there. Shannon's got garden technology, including the Green IQ Smart Garden Hub and the Parrot Flower Power, and a little help if you're trying to build your first Hackintosh. The two most important resources for anybody trying to make their own Apple hardware without paying for shiny Apple hardware prices. Hackintoshes are awesome. That's just my opinion.
I've got a sort of pseudo Hackintosh. I just have a VM that I run.
The simple Hackintosh, probably the smarter Hackintosh.
Yes. You don't have to worry about the hardware then. You just make the VM work. And then once you got that working, you're golden. Not as fast, but it works.
Suddenly I'm wondering if I could do Unraid with OS 10. Look at that. We'll look at that later. Oh my goodness. Ladies and gentlemen, PCPer.com is a place to find Alan Malventano's work on a regular basis. Ryan Schrout will be back from Florida next week, assuming he doesn't take the baby and run away on a Harley Davidson. I wouldn't bet money on that. The show you've been listening to is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, and you can find all of our episodes and how to subscribe to make sure you get all of them in the future at twitch.tv/twit.tv, twit.tv/twich. And we want to invite you to go listen to all of our episodes. And our thanks to our friends at Wealthfront for sponsoring this episode. With that, ladies and gentlemen, that's wealthfront.com/twitch, by the way. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Alan Malventano.
We'll see you next week on Twitch.